Representative Hornsby, we have a lot of bills on.
I know, sorry, Mr. Chairman, we have a very simple, matter here, just to incorporate an amendment, and I just needed to get the copy of the amendment. My apologies, Mr. Chair. As you will, recall, Mr. Chair and members, that,
You want to move the bill?
Yes, I'd like to move House File 809, to be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee?
That's correct.
Okay. And, Mr. Chair and members, you'll recall that we, had a hearing a couple of weeks ago on House File 809. We had, several members of the, St. Stephen's, Human Rights Group, who had been working with, the homeless. They gave a very compelling, presentation about the needs of, the homeless and other, clients that, utilize their services and similar services. And, I think, very clearly stated the need for a discount, transit pass program, particularly for the homeless. And, what has ensued since then was, conversations with the Metropolitan Council, you'll see the fiscal note, which is really null and void at this point, because the amendment before you, which, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move, the A09-0203 amendment, addresses this issue.
Representative Hornstein has moved the A09-0203 amendment. Any discussion? No. We don't have a quorum, basically, Representative Hornstein has agreed. We need one more.
I certainly can suspend until then.
Yeah, we can vote on it as soon as we get it. You can.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, let me just very quickly explain this amendment and why this why the fiscal note H.
Representative Hornstein, we have a quorum now.
Oh, wonderful.
We can all in favor of the amendment A09-0203, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? The amendment is adopted.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, what the amendment does is sets up a pilot program that the Met Council has proposed, and it allows 501c3 charitable organizations to purchase 50% discount passes, the Section 2 of the amendment requires a report to evaluate how the pilot program is going, and then we have this app applied to the seven counties in the metro area served by Metro Transit with an effective date of September 09. And Mr. Chair, members, this would really render the fiscal note that you have here null and void. There's now no fiscal note for this bill. The Met Council is able to use existing resources to, is able to use existing resources for the purposes of this pilot program.
Representative Hornstein, basically that's the only issue before us in the Finance Division. Now, we anticipate all the discussion and everything else on. Do you have people? It would occur to me we wouldn't have that much testimony.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we've heard this bill already, and I think that the issue before us today was the fiscal note. The fiscal note is no longer an issue. We have a pilot program that's now been agreed to by the Metropolitan Council. We've had some of the stakeholders review this amendment over the last 24 hours, and I think, you know, Senator Dibble may, you know, do some things with it, but at this point we're just incorporating it into my bill and moving it along.
Okay, and just for that reason, I'm just going to ask if there's any testimony against or for it. I believe our testimony should be limited. And is anyone in the audience that wants to testify for or against it? If not, Representative Hornstein, you want to renew your motion?
I'll renew my motion that House File 809 as amended be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Finance Committee.
That's correct. You heard the motion? Any questions or all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? The motion is passed and it will be returned to the Finance Committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
The next one is Representative Nelson. Are you available? Oh, he is. Okay. While he's there, did someone check your minutes? Representative Reinert moves you up in the minutes of March 17th. Any questions or additions? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary. The minutes are approved. Representative Nelson. Welcome to the committee. I'll move your bill if you got somebody move. No, you're on the committee.
The committee, I'll move my bill. Where is it?
Go to the finance committee.
Goes to the finance committee. Move House File 1467 to be passed and recommend a path to move to finance.
Okay. Yeah. The bill's been moved.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have Mr. Qualley here who would like to describe the bill. And I'm carrying this for the railroad, and he understands it, and I'll let him go. And I've got an amendment here that I'd like to approach Mr. Burris here, some language that was just handed to me, so we can get written to an amendment. And
okay, we could just have Mr. Burris check it. You need the copy, or is it?
I'm just going to give it to him.
Mr. Burris, do you need time, or is it a quarter of a minute? You want to explain the bill that long?
We'll explain the bill, yeah. And just the language that he's got there with the railroad companies, some suggestions they have to make it better, and he can explain to them it after he gets it written up. But I'll let Mr. Qualley explain the bill.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Qualley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Philip Qualley, State Legislative Director for the United Transportation Union, representing the conductors, switchmen, yardmasters, remote control locomotive operators in the state of Minnesota. I would like to briefly run through the bill. Our bill directs MnDOT to apply for switch point monitoring system not in non-signal territory safety systems from the federal government. The Federal Railroad Safety Enhancement Act of 2008 was put together this past year with railroad carriers, unions, and bipartisan support, and represents a rare opportunity for railroad and public safety in Minnesota. I would quickly like to read a summary of the technology that we are proposing. I will walk through the quick explanation of the track, a couple of comments from the FRA, as well as a couple of questions as to why we would ask the legislature and perhaps to direct MnDOT to take action on this opportunity from the federal government.
I can take you at your word quickly.
Thank you.
I can take you at your word quickly, Mr. Barley.
I can close my testimony if you'd like.
No, I think I recall your testimony, and I just was reminding you that quickly means quickly sometimes.
Okay.
You want to give it all that you got.
I won't count boxcars. In summary, the key objective of the switch point monitoring system, or an SPMS, is to monitor, detect, and report improperly aligned switches on main tracks, which could compromise the safe movement of trains in non-signal territory. When an improper switch point alignment is detected, the system will convey the information through a wireless network to the train dispatch system, allowing the train dispatcher to provide safe mitigation of the reported switch anomaly. SPMS provides an innovative, low-cost, closed-loop technology for improvement of freight and passenger train railway safety, affording a safer transportation environment at the community and industry levels by preventing train collisions and derailments. Very quickly, in the state of Minnesota, we have over 1,200 miles of non-signaled 40 and 50 mile per hour track. That is essentially 1880s technology. By the state of Minnesota applying for this grant program, which is currently in rulemaking at the Federal Rail Administration, we believe that it will present the first overlay of a fail-safe safety system for the railroad operations in the state. It's clearly a benefit to workers' safety, but most importantly, I hope from the legislature's perspective, particularly with the increase in tonnage and hazardous materials we're hauling, be a real boon to public safety. In fact, I would submit it's the single best thing that the legislature could do for public safety in this session. So I will not go on any further, but I can take any questions if you'd like. I would simply like to thank the committee for hearing our point of view on this and hope you'll support the legislation.
Mr. Crowley, you're describing basically the work of a switch, or technology in a switch?
That's correct.
Any questions from Representative Beard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Crowley, refresh my memory, and thank you for the presentation in my office. Members, this is a device that goes on a switch where there is no signal, what we call dark track. There is an old-fashioned technology that exists now. It's called reflectorized stand. When you're approaching the switch in a train, if the signboard is green, the switch is probably aligned. If it's red, it means you're going to diverge and run off into the weeds somewhere. However, sometimes vandals give me the switches and leave the green alignment marker aligned, so it kind of takes the engineer by surprise when you arrive at the switch and find the points are gapped or damaged in some fashion. Remind me, though, how the signal gets to the engineer. Is this going to be an electronically transmitted device or just a light board that stands there in lieu of the green signboard we have now?
Mr. Qualley.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, committee members. In your handouts, there is a FRA, Federal Railroad Administration, technology summary piece. But the switch points on the mainline switch will have a monitor and sensor. And that will be transmitted via wireless communication radio to the dispatcher's center, and also could be relayed directly to the locomotive council if the locomotive council is fitted with the receiver. The key piece here is that the power to the sensor can be either direct wired or it will be solar powered into a battery unit, which the railroads have been using for several years now. I'm solar power, I'm pleased to say. But the other piece here is that as we move down the track on a freight train, we have a clearance, and we have our warrants for bulletins, and we have our orders, much like in a military procedure. A train dispatcher will not give us authority on the main track if he would see then with a switch point monitor system that any of the switches are non-aligned. And again, it could be by human error, it could be by vandal, it could be by ground shifting or ice buildup in the switches. We think this is the first positive step in quite a long time for public and rail safety. Thank you for your question.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize to the committee. There is a handout here that I apparently couldn't find on a moment's notice. Thank you to Representative Reiner for handing me his. It does explain it rather well. Mr. Chair, before we vote on this, is there anyone from the railroad industry that would like to...
We do have some testimony.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Crowley, thank you for coming to see me. I'm new in this committee, and your explanation of all the technology was great, and I'm kind of felt like I understood it even. And I like the idea. I was looking at the language, however, and brought my attention to there's a, you know, we're applying for, and maybe Representative Nelson, this is for you, we're directing the commissioner to apply for grants to get the technology and help pay for the installation. And in the toward the on line 1.16, the commissioner shall prioritize grant requests and the installation of switch indicator signals. Do we want the grant request to be for the installation of the signals, or do we want a separate meaning of prioritize grant requests and prioritize installation of switch indicator signals?
I'll let Mr. Qualley answer the Mr. Qualley.
And could there be a distinction in that word "and" there that's really separate from the intent, which is to get them to apply for the grant?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I did write this bill with the idea at 1.16 that the "and" does stand, that we do want the MnDOT to apply for the federal grant program, which is in a rulemaking process right now. In the federal level, but we do want to see in the state of Minnesota
that we do get these switch point indicators, signals, and monitoring systems installed. We do believe, and we should go forward and do so until the federal grant program is exhausted or we have finally signalized our non-signal track territory. Again, we see these as assets to commerce and safety.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it my understanding, I mean, I'm being kind of a wonk here, I know that, mm-hmm. but is it my understanding that you would want them to prioritize the installation, whether or not they get the grants? Or is it about prioritizing getting the grants so we can get them installed? Because I would, as I'm reading this, and I've been sitting here dwelling on this, and playing with whether it's the grant request for the installation or whether it's the grant request, and by the way, you're also prioritizing installation, and hopefully you get the grants. Is that the way we want it to be, or do we want it prioritizing getting the grants so we can do the installation? See the distinction that I'm making? And I don't know if it is there, right? And maybe we need somebody else to...
Yeah. Mr. Paul, thank you. You would.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we want to prioritize the commissioner to get the grants, apply for the grants, and toward the installation of the switches. I don't know if I'm answering your question. I will say this. From the congressional mandate, all Class 1 freight railroads are under a congressional order to have their main lines prepared for positive train control by year 2015, which is computerized operation of trains. This switch point monitoring system is forward compatible in a part of that system. Now, the positive train control is another debate for another day, it is our intention that the switch point monitoring system, really, we'd like to see that installed as soon as possible. I'm sorry if I didn't answer your question.
Oh, maybe, Mr. Chair, maybe I'm not being clear. I don't know.
I see what you, and we'll ask Mr. Burris as soon as he's got a minute. Mr. Burris, in line 1.16, is that a semantic? Are we prioritizing grant requests or the installation, basically, is the question.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm going to need a minute. I haven't entirely been following that
yeah.
discussion.
And we'll fit it on 1.16. Can you just take a look at that one?
Mr. Chair, I
can buy another time. I'll talk to you. But it might be just a matter of a word, I think, if he looks at it. Is that a problem or not? We can leave that lay for a minute.
Mr. Chair, members, my quick read is that the function of that and is unclear as it currently is expressed.
That's what I'm thinking. And Mr. Quality, I don't know how that applies, but maybe you didn't quite get the question, but it looks like they're prioritizing grants, and maybe you want to prioritize the installation, or are there that many grants if you're going to prioritize them? I guess that's the question, the way I understand it. Mr. Qualley, did you not?
Mr. Chairman, it is my intention that the priority be for the grants
okay.
until such a time the installations are complete.
That, Representative Demmer, that clarifies it, doesn't it, then?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think we're both looking for the same thing. I'm just wondering if... I just don't want a misinterpretation and somebody come back and say, well, we're prioritizing grants and installation. Well, we didn't get a grant, but it's sure we're still prioritizing installation. Will that cause a problem? And maybe that's what you want. I don't know. I'm just thinking, you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
I think we want grants for the installation, though, is what I'm thinking. That's the first thing I wanted to say when I saw Ann. I thought, oh. And then I debated if I should say anything because sometimes I get wonky about this, but I decided I'd better ask because if we're doing things. So.
Is that okay, Representative Nelson and Mr. Qualley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand what you're saying, and there's some ambiguity there. And I'm just trying to figure out...
We can leave it lay for a minute.
We can leave it lay for a minute. And,
there was a question, Representative Joint, or do you have further questions? Representative Stevenson. Yeah. Is there any other questions? Do you have any further testimony, Mr. Qualley?
No, thank you. Mr. Chairman, committee members, thanks for listening to my testimony.
We do have that amendment being drafted, and we can get the other we have another testifier. That's okay, we can get Mr. Gardner, is that it? Oh, Mr. Gardner, right.
And I apologize for the amendment that was brought to me by Mr. Gardner at the last minute and suggestion that he had, so I'm trying to work with the railroads along with the railroad union and everybody.
We've got a hard and fast rule, which we're breaking. Mr. Gardner, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Leader. Members of the committee, I'm Joe Gardner, MnDOT Freight Rail and Waterways. As Mr. Qualley indicated, this is an emerging area. The program has not been established yet by USDOT, so we're waiting for that. We're waiting for grant guidance to be issued. There have not been any funds appropriated for this, so there are some ambiguities out there. Nonetheless, as Mr. Qualley indicated, this is part of a broader program of requirements and development for things like positive train control and some important safety measures that the railroads will be implementing in the upcoming years. We frequently work with our partners to access federal funds under various programs. We'd be happy to do that in this case. With or without this legislation, we did make some suggestions to clarify the responsibilities of the railroad. For example, apparently there will be a 20% match that's required. We would like the railroads to commit to providing that 20% match. We would concur with the wording for rather than and, that this is for the installation. We would prefer to do a solicitation of the railroads once we know what the program rules are and see who is interested in the program, who is willing to commit to it, and then submit an application to USDOT. If the railroads provide the technical documentation, we're not experts in this area, and that they're responsible for installing the technologies that meet FRA standards. FRA governs or regulates communication and signal systems for the railroads, and those standards are changing as well. So we are comfortable with this if the changes, the amendments are made as indicated, which clarifies the roles of the state versus the railroads.
I believe he's still working on it. Are there questions to the representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Gardner, would these proposed changes affect all railroads or just Class 1 railroads? All classes?
Mr. Gardner.
No. Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, it really depends on the particular technology and systems that you're talking about. Really, this is directed towards Class 1 railroads primarily. The mandate for positive train control is for Class 1 railroads and also passenger railroads, regardless of who operates them.
And Mr. Chairman, is that what the bill reflects? I'm not understanding exactly if the bill reflects all railroads or just the Class 1, because my concern, Mr. Chairman, members, is that I understand it's an 80-20 match, and I don't know exactly what these things are going to cost, but some of our railroads are struggling, and I know, you know, the smaller ones especially, and I don't want to have them be having to cough up some money they really don't have. So.
Mr. Gardner, do you have any comment? And I think you're concerned about short line. I think he's short line.
Right. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Magnus, I would not expect the short line regional railroads to be interested in this program primarily because of the cost issue, but I can't speak for the authors.
Mr. Qualley, do you have comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I may, Representative, I think that much of that will be set forth in the rulemaking at the federal level for this grant program. Thank you.
Right now, Mr. Qualley, I see it says in excess of 20 miles per hour. In the short lines, I don't know how much they're going to excess of that or not. I think one of them is, or not, you know? But one of the short lines...
Mr. Chairman, committee members, some, but in particular, we're the Dakota, Minnesota, and Eastern, which is a Class 2 in southern Minnesota, would be affected by this in any track that they operate over 20 miles per hour.
Representative Magnus, are you comfortable with what he told us?
I think so.
Okay. Are there further questions? Not, could we just temporarily lay this aside so we don't want to put the pressure on Mr. Burr?
Yeah, we can do that.
If there are no further questions, we'll temporarily lay this aside.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Representative Beard, are you ready? Are you ready to present a bill?
Yes, I am. Sorry.
If you have cell phones or some electrical devices, it's interfering with our recordings, and it's appreciated if you check and shut them down.
No, I don't. You're right. You're looking at
or turned off, I mean, not shut down. Shut down the
That's probably good.
Mr. Chairman, where would you like to go after we pass? Where would we like to go?
Finance.
Like finance?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, I'm prepared to move House File 775 and move its adoption and re-referral to the Finance Committee.
Prepared the motion. Okay, Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is an agency bill that was brought to me by the Department of Motor Vehicles regarding basically cleaning up some language that was apparently inadvertently left out in the 2005 legislation. Whenever we, and whenever the department performs services like, as you see them listed here in the line 1.24 of the bill, on page 2, the collector plate transfer, special plates down in line 2.32, and so on and so forth. There are small fees that are attached to that that were originally intended, I believe, to help support the costs of administering the services in the department and not originally intended to go into the highway user trust fund. So this cleans up that language. It has no impact on the general fund. I believe it has a small impact on the highway user fund. Oh, wait, perhaps not. We're going to have a testifier here that's going to clarify everything I'm trying to tell you. Because apparently we've been depositing the monies where they go anyhow, but just that we weren't doing it in accordance with language, so we're going to make the language actually match up with our action. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to introduce an old friend of the committee, Pat McCormick, if I may have her explain this a little more lucidly.
Representative Dewitt, as I see this, you're calling for an increase in license plates, I hope.
Nice try. I don't think so.
Ms. McCormick.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick, the Division Director for Driver and Vehicle Services with the Department of Public Safety. And as Representative Beard stated, this is a correction bill. When we changed our operation, our fiscal operation to a fee-based budget, inadvertently these small fees were while we started transferring the money to the vehicle services special revenue account, the statute citations were not changed. And so we had just completed a search of all of our statutes and fees and cross-referencing over this past year to ensure that to verify what kind of revenue we're bringing in, and at that time we realized that for some reason we had left these statutes out when we had changed over to a new funding system. And so we're just requesting that these changes be made. As Representative Beard said, the most money that would be anticipated of any of these fees would involve the disability plates, and that amount of money is a little over $3,000. Most of these fees that were affected bring in very little revenue, and so but we have been collecting this revenue in our vehicle services special revenue account since 2005. So that's why the bill would retroactively make these changes as of August 1st, 2005.
Ms. McCormick, how is normally are you operating with the fees, or are you being supplemented?
Mr. Chair, we operate based on the fees that we collect. So in other words, We don't collect, the only highway user tax distribution fund money that's used is for is for plate production. Other than that, we operate strictly on the fees that we collect on the driver services side and on the vehicle services side. So we're talking about the filing fees that we collect, as well as the driver license fees and the reinstatement fees that we collect on the driver's side.
I'm not being smart, but are you able to uniformly keep, or you aren't going up and down in part-time help, or is it not a problem? My concern is, I think we talked before about, is your department losing money on these plates and special plates, you know, because you can't make money on it? That's the question I'd like to know.
Mr. Chair, I think that the only thing I can tell you right now, the only place where we're losing money is currently would be in the fact that we aren't issuing as many titles as we usually would have. So we certainly, our revenue on the vehicle services side is not, as if you look, compare it between this year and last year, we have lost some revenue, but we're still able to operate, and we manage it, which is what why we requested it in 2005, because we do, track revenue on a monthly basis, and at this time, we're just ensuring that we have at least a 5% vacancy in staff, so that we're able to manage the funding that we currently have in our budget. And so we're doing all right in our budget. But obviously, we track it closely, so we ensure that we have enough fees to operate, and we've been doing fine.
Are there any questions? Representative Magnus?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a related question. It's my understanding that after 7 years, you have to get new plates for a vehicle, Ms. McCormick, is that right? And you have to replace the plates on your existing plates on your vehicle?
Mr. Chair and Representative Magnus, yes, we have a 7-year lifetime for the plates, so that if they start fading or they get dented, that law enforcement is able to identify the vehicle. And so that's why we have that 7-year replacement policy.
And Mr. Chairman, I just got a special license plate online, and I think it cost me $30 to get proud to be a veteran on my license plate. But now, when I change in 7 years, and I hope to keep those, but in 7 years, do I pay the $30 again to get that going? That's just what I was leading to in the question. On some of these specialty plates.
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Representative Magnus, you pay the you pay whatever that fee is for the plate, and then you just pay your registration the other years.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? Not Representative Beard, do you want to renew your motion?
I will.
Are there any testifiers for or against?
Thank you.
Yes. Seeing none, Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman, I'll renew the motion. I won't speak any more to it so I don't over-talk the sale here, but I appreciate your support.
Representative Beard renews his motion that House File 775 be recommended to pass and return to the Finance Division Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary. The motion is adopted. Thank you, Representative Beard. We have Representative Detner. We'll kind of take them out of order because they're in other committees, and I believe you're prepared to. Welcome to the committee, Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chairman.
Is someone going to move, or if not, I'll move House File 672. Be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee. Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chairman and committee, you should have a fiscal note there, too, that says there is no fiscal problems with this bill. Basically, House File 672 bill expands the authority of the Minnesota Department of Transportation to authorize the use of shoulders for divided highways so that such use can be allowed throughout the state for certain transit buses and motor carrying buses to transport people. And under the current law, only the 7-county metro area allows it. I spoke with the Department of Transportation, also with the Highway Patrol. Apparently, they will set up which of these highways in the outstate can be used for this purposes. So with that, Mr. Chairman, that's the bill.
Do you have any testifiers, Representative Detmer?
I don't have any testifiers, no.
Are there questions from Representative Hornstein?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to let the committee know that we heard this in division, and Representative Detmer, I just want to thank him and commend him because he did some extra work with the Met Council and other stakeholders. So, you know, this bill is in the shape that, you know, the agencies are comfortable with.
Any further questions? Not, thank you, Representative Hornstein. No further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'll renew the motion in House File 672. Be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Division. All in favor say aye.
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 Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As is, they take the bus and leave the driving to us.
Okay. We have the amendment. Just so if you're ready. Representative Nelson, do you want to come back?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for your patience, and again, I apologize for just...
Because of the nature of the amendment, we didn't have it, and apparently it was a little bit more than a technical amendment. Normally we wouldn't have it that way, but Mr. Burris is under pressure, and I think he's got us pretty well together.
And you got they're passing out the amendment now. Basically what this amendment does is what this talked about here is they're in the process of federal rulemaking yet, and they're not sure whether that's going to be done by October 16th of 2009. So what the amendment does is says either October 16th, or later of October 16th, 2009, or 90 days after the publication of the federal rulemaking and the solicitation of a proposal for federal aid. That gives them leeway that if they don't have it done by then, they can still apply for this money. And then it directs that 20% of non-federal match that the railroad will be compelled to pay for that, and that the railroad will provide the technical and documentation as requested by the commissioner and the FRA. Mr. Burris pointed out that along with this amendment that on line 116, was that part of the amendment? I don't see it here. But on line 116, we need to add, before prioritized, after shall, they should put a number 1, parentheses 1, and on line 118, before the apply, put a parentheses 2. Because there's two requests that they're being told that they have to do. And I'd like to move this amendment, the M1 amendment.
Before you do that, Mr. Qualley, have you read the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I have.
Mr. Gardner, is that, have you checked it? Representative Nelson moved the amendment, M1. Any questions or comments? Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I don't want to drag this out much longer, but I saw a couple of railroad representatives in the audience. Are they interested in speaking to this or standing for any questions?
I'm going to ask for some testimony. You mean prior to the amendment?
Well, we can do the amendment, then I'll ask if there's anyone to
We can move the amendment.
Thank you.
Not all in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary? The amendment is adopted.
Where was that?
If there's no further testimony, I'm going to check with the audience.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, I've got one more oral amendment here that we discussed that on line 1.16, the and, with the prioritized request grants, delete the and replace that with for the installation of. That I think that'll take care of Representative Demers. That work?
Mr. Burris, is that okay? Did everyone understand the amendment? No, we'll accept that as a friendly amendment. I guess we got to vote on it anyhow.
So I move that amendment.
Okay. All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
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 Contrary. The amendment is adopted. Any further testimony by either? Is someone from the audience who wants to testify for or against the bill? If not, Representative Nelson, you renew your motion that House File 1467 be recommended to pass and return to the Finance Commission.
That's my motion.
And as amended.
As amended.
Right. Any questions?
No.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary. The House File 1467 passed and will be referred to the Finance Division.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee.
Representative Owen, are you ready? Welcome to the committee, Representative Owen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You have someone to move your amendment, otherwise I would move it.
I think you get to do the honors.
Okay, House File, I recommend that Representative Owen, the chair will move that House File 1051 be recommended to pass and return to the Finance Committee. Representative Owen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is basically a request that there be two railroad crossing devices placed in the city of Roosevelt, one of them on Roosevelt County State Aid Highway 71 and the other on Roosevelt County State Aid Highway 17. By way of background, these are obviously railroad crossings, and what happened, I got a letter from a constituent that lives in Roosevelt indicating that her son was killed because of trains going through in that area at high rates of speed, and she was her son got hit when he tried to cross and was obvious. Unfortunately, with railroad, is usually the case, you don't live when you get hit with a railroad train. So basically, it's a constituent request, and she made the request on one track, but on one of the roads, but I'm well aware of the fact in that area that there's more than one road. In fact, there's probably more than the two I put down, because those are major roads heading towards Rocky Point Resort, which is quite popular in the Lake of the Woods area. So it's a well-used highway. So that base is essentially what I'm requesting, is two railroad cross arms be added in that area under the federal program set up to do so.
Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm just, is this an agreement for the whole District 2, or generally in this committee we don't do project-specific funding and that we allow those in the district to prioritize the expenditure of their dollars? And so I'm just kind of wondering, do you have district support, or are you spending all the money for the district, or...
Representative Holberg, quite frankly, I didn't know that was a procedure that had to be used, so I just used the procedure that I thought was necessary to do it as made a bill on behalf of my constituents.
Representative Holberg, and I was aware of that. Now, I didn't realize that to that extent, but I think probably that does create a problem. We normally don't earmark, and I was wondering if it was specific to some federal legislation or something. Do you have? Mr. Gardner is here too, and wants to testify against it, so... But I didn't really realize that this is one of those situations.
Yeah.
It does cause a problem, as you can respect, Mr. Representative Coleman, because everybody would come in, and I didn't catch it that it was identified as specific that way. And I believe there's a pickle note, but it doesn't have a mileage. And normally, if they're cross-arm signals or whatever it is, railroad crossing gates, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll have Mr. Gardner testify.
Okay.
Representative Morgan. Mr. Chair, I was suggesting that perhaps we could change the motion instead of passing it to finance. Maybe we could hear the testimony and then lay it over for possible inclusion once we get some more information about the situation.
Thank you. It might be a problem though, because we're kind of setting precedent again, and we've been trying to avoid to set precedent. So.
I'm just saying, if we lay it over, Mr. Chair, excuse me, if we just lay it over, then
we could lay it over.
Yeah.
We'll have testimony from Mr. Gardner, too. Mr. Gardner?
Chair Leader, members of the committee, we have had a chance to take a look at the bill, and you know, we concur that there's some significant needs around the state for improving grade crossings. We have about 3,000 passive unprotected crossings out there. There are about 1,500 that have some form of active protection, such as flashers or gates and signals. This bill would require the use of $500,000 of federal aid that's allocated to MnDOT's District 2 to be used to improve two rail crossings in the county. Our process for evaluating safety treatments at all the crossings is to conduct diagnostic reviews on site with the railroad, with the local road authority. We last reviewed these particular crossings that are the subject of the bill in 2004. At that time, the railroad corrected some deficiencies. There used to be three parallel tracks. They removed two of the tracks to make it a safer situation. There was a fatality at one of these locations this past January, which is the concern. So we are going to conduct another full diagnostic review this year at both of these locations to see if any additional changes are warranted. However, our office makes recommendations for improvements to each area transportation partnership, and it's really the ATP that selects the projects. We did not recommend either of these projects this past year, and the ATP did not select either of the projects. The projects that were selected in District 2 are currently underway. They're under contract, and the funds have been expended. Our concern really with this type of bill is that it directs federal funding to specific railroad projects rather than following the established process that we've got, where all rail crossings are objectively evaluated and ranked in priority order for signal upgrade. And it's really through that established process that we try to ensure that the most dangerous, most hazardous crossings are addressed first. We simply have to, within the resources that are available, have to identify the most hazardous and try to pursue those. So we recognize there's some needs here, but we can't recommend them yet until we do additional review.
Mr. Gardner, there's still what they call a highway rail safety. You used to have an account you could apply for, the counties could, to get signals a few years ago. There's no more account like that?
We receive a small amount of highway safety account money to help with these projects, about $600,000 per year, to match the approximately $5 million per year in federal funds that we have access to. But a number of local authorities decide that because we have such a backlog and such a resource constraint, considering the number of needs that are out there, a number of local communities just go ahead and pursue these on their own and find alternate sources of funding. We provide the technical resource to do it right.
Mr. Gardner, I still participate by the railroad, and they still have to sign a maintenance agreement. The county, is this a county road representing Orma? A county state highway? Not a trunk highway, is it?
I don't believe it's a trunk highway where it's going. No, Your Honor.
Mr. Gardner, then the county would have to sign a maintenance agreement too, wouldn't they, for the crossing or not?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, actually the railroad is responsible for maintaining the equipment itself.
Well, it's a cooperative agreement, I think. Unless they don't do that anymore. Okay.
Yes, it's an agreement.
I wonder if then a woman, I'm sorry I didn't recognize this when it came in, but there's a process. I think if the county engineer would apply it again through Mr. Gardner's office and back to the ATP, at least you'd get... As you indicate, though, you're going to re-survey or take a look at that crossing yet. If that would be okay, Representative Owen, I think we should...
Mr. Chairman, to be perfectly honest, had Mr. Gardner told me that they were going to do a study of that, we probably wouldn't be holding this hearing right now. We're going to save this time.
No, that's fine. That would work. I think if that's... you'll be doing a study of that, Mr. Gardner. And I think to Representative Owen, make certain the county engineer applies for crossings.
Yes,
now,
thank you.
We'll withdraw that motion and just withdraw
that's
the
fine.
Bill. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
I think what left was Representative Hollersman. Are you taking up the fruit? Which bill are you going to take up first, Representative Hollersman? We only have two of them. I thought we had two. Well, Hollersman and Hornsby, okay. Oh, that's all. Representative Hollersman, this is a bill that basically you're just going to have introduced and we're going to be aware of it and actually lay it on the table, basically, and hopefully we'll have a steady or an interim steady just in the interim. So there's no action going to be taken on this bill, and we're not going to vote it up or down, and we're not going to take basically any testify other than informational thing.
Introduction, maybe.
Introduction.
Are you ready for me to proceed?
Mm-hmm. I don't think you have to.
You're ready for me to proceed?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, when I first started thinking about this, it was because I read a particular white paper that a gentleman who's been working in this field for some time had worked in the field and knew something about the issues, and there was a phrase that jumped out at me. And that was that we have created something of a balkanized mess. That was the term, and I've used that many times since. And I think in some ways since then we have made it even worse. I was struck, Mr. Chair, as you had to hear bills that you presented today to my Capital Investment Committee, that I had the sense of something sort of spinning out of control with no
Representative, I could just interrupt. The committee has in its position, and in fact, if you didn't see it, the recommendations from this committee to Representative Hausman, which were this afternoon, that's what she's referring to.
As you presented, there was this sense that all of these communities have no other way to deal with this. We have no other governance structure than for them to introduce bills and to come to this committee. It is not clear, I think, to any of them what sort of decision-making or governance structure this will go into, what sort of funding streams or formulas might deal with this. As I sat with groups in my office, I began to have this feeling that we all agree we have one Minnesota. In a whole bunch of areas, whether we're talking about education or healthcare or transportation, we have one Minnesota. We no longer have those clear regional lines that we may once upon a time have built our structures on. And so I began to have this fanciful idea that if we just pulled Metro Transit out from under Met Council and the Office of Transit into a transit agency charged with making sense of the state, that perhaps we could begin to bring some order to the decision making. I will tell you, I had a hard time turning my back on this audience because I've made so many enemies that I thought turning my back on this group was probably not a good thing. But you know, Representative Hornstein got right into the spirit, and he'll make everyone in the audience very nervous when I tell you he's already got the logo for this particular agency. We'll copy it sometime and share it with you all. It's really quite wonderful. I know you don't want to spend much time on it, but I have a Mr. John DeWitt here to give you the larger context into why we should care about spending any time on this. So, Mr. DeWitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm John DeWitt. I was a founding member of Transit for Livable Communities in 1995 and served on its board until 3 years ago. I was a Hennepin County appointee to the Citizens Advisory Committee for the Hiawatha Light Rail Line. I'm currently chair of the Transit Committee for my neighborhood, Minneapolis' Prospect Park, where we're deeply involved in Central Corridor issues and I'm an alternate on the Southwest LRT Project Advisory Committee. There's a convergence of issues today suggesting that business as usual will no longer work. I would argue that transit can play a crucial role in successfully addressing virtually all of these issues. I'll just hit the five most critical issues first. Number one, we have issues of petroleum price and availability. We saw last summer that the spike in gas prices was accompanied by a surge in transit ridership. Is transit really our first line of defense against high gas prices that are almost certain to return? Number two, global warming. In 2007, this legislature established aggressive goals for a reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. Researchers at the University of Minnesota tell us we can't meet these goals without driving less. Last year, the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group, appointed by Governor Pawlenty, unanimously recommended that 60% of the growth in the Twin Cities region take place in the already developed area. But the group soon learned that our transit system can accommodate no more than 30%. Meeting these goals will require a much more robust transit system than we have today. Next is the obesity epidemic. An article in yesterday's Star Tribune reported that obesity in our state has reached epidemic proportions, with 62% of Minnesotans overweight. Part of the solution, of course, is to make our communities more walkable and bikeable, and transit plays an important role in making this happen. Finally, we have an aging population, sometimes referred to as the silver tsunami. A friend of mine, a retired math professor from the University of Minnesota, recently moved to Portland, Oregon. He told us that one of the reasons that he and his wife had moved was that they discovered that they could live in Portland without a car, something they could not do in the Twin Cities. He went on to explain that today, not driving was a choice, but that in a few years, not driving might be the socially responsible thing to do, and he wanted that option. We need to do better than offer people like him one option, leaving Minnesota. I'm concerned about how fast and how far we're falling behind the rest of the country when it comes to transit and light rail in particular. The first table I passed out shows the number of light rail vehicles operated by transit systems around the country. It's obvious that the Twin Cities region ranks near the bottom. I think we're third from the bottom. It's worrisome that we're only competitive with regions one-third to one-half our size. Eight other regions are or will be soon operating over 100 light rail vehicles, four times what our region can muster. And if we look at plans from other regions, we find that the Twin Cities is coming up short again. Portland, Oregon is about to open its fifth light rail line and is about to start construction on its sixth. Seattle may be getting a late start as their first light rail line won't actually open until the summer. But it's going to jump ahead quickly. Last November, 58% of the region's voters approved an $18 billion transit referendum. On March 6th, they broke ground on a $1.9 billion light rail extension, even before their first line opened. Seattle has gone from maybe someday to get it done. Dallas plans to complete three new lines by 2013. Salt Lake City plans to complete four new lines by 2015. Denver's Fast Tracks program will deliver six new lines by 2017. And Houston just signed a contract for the construction of four new lines by 2012. In the Twin Cities, we hope to have one new line, the Central Corridor, open in 2014. We might have two more light rail lines by 2030, or we might not. One detects a sense of urgency in the plans other regions are making, a sense of urgency that's lacking in the Twin Cities. When it comes to transit, the Twin Cities is still maybe someday. But in a rapidly changing world, maybe someday isn't good enough. I believe that we must become much more aggressive about developing transit, and we can't do that without taking a hard look at our transit governance. The handout on transit governance shows that we have perhaps the only captive transit agency in the country. Metro Transit is completely controlled by the Metropolitan Council, which also controls all planning. Most other regions have independent transit agencies. Most are governed by a structure resembling a council of governments. That is, board members or local elected officials are their appointees. For its first 6 years, our Metropolitan Transit Commission, predecessor to Metro Transit, was governed this way. Denver's RTE does have a board elected publicly, and three systems have boards appointed by a governor. In Buffalo's case, Senate confirmation is required. An independent agency can articulate a bold vision and advocate for it. If you have a bold vision and effective advocacy, as we've seen in regions around the country, the funding will follow. It's been argued that one of the benefits of our transit governance structure is its efficiency. And we do know that Metro Transit is one of the most efficient transit systems in the country. But I'm concerned that we've become obsessed with efficiently running the transit system we have while we're ignoring the transit system we need if we're going to be a competitive, vibrant, and livable region in the 21st century. In closing, I'd like to acknowledge that I focused on transit in the Twin Cities. Greater Minnesota does face many of the same challenges. But consolidations also present a real challenge. Stores and small towns are consolidated into a Pamida or Walmart on the outskirts of town. Government functions are increasingly consolidated into county seats or regional centers. A growing number of people will need the access provided by public transit. This is one more reason why, as the Star Tribune wrote Monday, Minnesota is a state hungry for public transit. I thank you for your attention and be happy to answer any questions.
And Mr. Chair, again, for your record, he has given you the chart on transit governance, just quickly giving you a sense of the cities you saw on the previous graph, where they fall in terms of governance. I'm going to give you the more personal thing. I've been trying to be motivated by the words that you just heard from Mr. DeWitt. It's about all I do anymore. I get that focus. And the urgency is for all the reasons he mentioned. I announced last year at a local and metropolitan governance committee that I'd be working on this. If anyone wanted to join the work group, and Representative Holberg was the only one who indicated an interest, and so the work group of two just didn't happen because we were, I think, hoping for a more vigorous discussion. This bill is not ready for prime time, and so I haven't even spent a lot of time fine-tuning some pieces. If you read it carefully, you saw the math for composition of the Council of Governments doesn't even work out right, because the point is the composition of that CHOG really should be determined by a group of people sitting around a table debating that very thing, what would be fair representation. As you pointed out, we're not voting today. I'm hoping that we're referring this for study, and Representative Hornstein has indicated some willingness to do this in the interim. But let me just tell you from my perspective what I think Minnesota has done. In the 60s, we started building this tower, and we layered bureaucracy. And we did something in the 60s, and then the 70s, and then the 80s, and then the 90s, and 2007. And when we layered, I don't know if it's Minnesota nice, but we never got rid of stuff. We just kept layering. Now we have a Metropolitan Council that is a seven-county agency. I don't think anyone in this room would argue that we still have a seven-county metro area, but that is what our agency does. In the transportation bill, we formed something else, CTIB. We didn't expand. We narrowed. That's a five-county planning agency. And in some ways, that smaller entity had even more power, because when there is a leadership vacuum, whatever leadership is there is going to move in. So my capital investment committee, as we toured the state, we went to Duluth, and we were ready to have Duluth pitch us on their project, one of which was what we now call Northern Lights Express. And I was surprised to walk into the room and have Anoka County and Hennepin County there. That's how we do things. People start pairing up and start planning routes, because there is no other entity that is doing this. I was further surprised when in my office one day as we were talking, I had a CTIB map. This is the five-county agency, and the high-speed rail that's coming up from Chicago. I saw on this little map that this came through the Twin Cities, that purple line, through the Twin Cities, and it went up to Duluth on a CTIB map. and I thought, wonder how St. Cloud would feel about that. Has St. Cloud been able to make their argument that maybe that would be the better route for it to go? There's no one having that conversation. In the transportation bill, we have a quarter cent sales tax. And we have a bizarre situation where our Metropolitan Council, which is still in place, as the planning and operating agency, didn't get that money to operate its transit system. That's what we did in the transportation bill. Our Metropolitan Council is still in place as the planning and operating agency, but the revenue doesn't flow to them. And so this year, we have to try to come up with some other way to operate our buses. By the way, MnDOT, which figures in this, they used to do commuter rail. Now we talk about passenger rail. In another bill that just was introduced, I believe today or yesterday, we're suddenly rushing forward to say, oh my gosh, we have to give them planning and operating authority to pass the passenger rail, because we haven't said that anywhere. It's a very last minute bill moving through the process because we haven't been intentional. We have had bills for staggered terms of the Met Council. We have a bill making the seven-county Met Council a council of governments. We have the bill designating MnDOT as planning and operating agency for passenger rail. It feels piecemeal and reactionary. When we have a bill, it feels piecemeal and reactionary. Last year, I put in as an amendment a request for a state rail plan that would provide statewide planning and a clear plan for both freight and passenger rail. For some reason, we didn't start on that road. We instead had a rail forum that was just going to deal with passenger rail, and it was actually the group that was going to recommend projects for federal funding. St. Cloud wasn't there. I talked to the mayor recently. I think they're going to be invited because clearly it's one of our significant regional centers and ought to be there. And so when you start piecemealing, you inevitably forget people. Not in any mean-spirited way, but because it's not a comprehensive, well-thought-out issue. Back when Ron Abrams was still House Tax Chair, he, in his tax bill, changed from being property tax-based for operating and moving that off the property tax. Before that time, we had communities that were called opt-out communities. They had opted out of that system. But when we got rid of that property tax for operating, we didn't say, well, now we've got a problem with these opt-outs. They're not opting out of anything anymore. But we didn't deal with it at the time because they're our friends, they're well operated, we don't want to make enemies, we don't want to upset the apple cart. We have a transit taxing district in the metropolitan area that matches nothing relevant anymore. It's not even the same as the five-county metro area. The only thing is, if you live in it, you pay. And if you don't live in it, you don't, except once in a while it gets extended. We have had bills in this committee just the other day, rural transit facilities GO bonds that will come to the committee and that that state taxpayers will assume responsibility for. We had a Metropolitan Council bill where Metro property taxpayers will purchase their buses. You either, to put another idea on the table to deal with this, you either have to be brave or stupid, and I haven't figured out yet just which category I am, because nobody wants to jeopardize people that are their friends. But no one could rationally argue for why we're doing it the way we're doing. I don't think anyone could rationally argue. It is a creation of history. We've never created. But we're potentially building systems not based on priorities or even flowing appropriately through the region. And I'll use this as an example. This one I don't have a blow up. But as we're talking about commuter rail and passenger rail now, which is on the drawing board this year, I have a map that flows nicely through the region and would seem the reasonable place for passenger rail to go. But if you could see the fine-tuning here, right here it's going to make a sharp turn and go into Minneapolis and end at the Twin Stadium. So if you're coming from Duluth and you're on your way to the airport or you're on your way to Chicago and there's a Twins game that day, you are all going to go down to the Twins Stadium and be caught in the Twins traffic. And that is maybe the best way to do it. But as I look at maps, I'm not sure, have we ever asked whether cross-regional traffic is the better way for passenger rail and commuter rail. It happens, it feels, even to someone like me who has been involved in this intensely, sometimes accidental, and depends on who is at the table. So, for years, I've gotten these patronizing pats on the head. I think they hoped I would go away. When we still had MCDD, for years, MCDD said to me, yes, we'll do governance. We'll have something for you by the end of the session. Or maybe, we'll have something for you next year. And then the transportation bill year happened, and I said, we have to fix governance. And they said, not now, Alice, we have to do the funding bill. We have to figure out how to pass this funding bill. But then, surprise, surprise, we did governance in that bill. I don't know how it happened. I wasn't at the table, so I don't know how it was written or where it came. But suddenly we had another layer of governance. So now everyone says to me, why now? You haven't even given CTIB a chance to succeed. My own county commissioner looked as though his feelings were hurt. This bill makes my friends angry. In my office, I can no longer discuss metro routes without pulling out statewide maps. So I have a new one.
Great.
That's the one I pull out now. In my office, I can't discuss metro routes without pulling out this one because where is it going to go in the state? And vice versa, I can't any longer discuss those metro maps without saying, and after it leaves the seven-county metro area, where does it go? Those arbitrary lines aren't working for the kinds of recommendations that Representative Leader has been hearing. This year, I just learned today, in the Senate, and those of you, if you represent a place like Chanhassen or Chaska or somewhere near, might want to pay attention to this. This year, there's a Senate bill, I believe, or at least it's happening in Senator Murphy's committee, in which they propose that we go back to the property tax for operating because we don't have enough operating money. They don't want to use the 4% sales tax for operating. They have to come up with something else. And so the proposal is we're just going to have to say that property tax could be used for both capital and operating. There has to be another solution. That means if you're in Chanhassen or Chaska, you're going to pay that tax, even if you don't have transit service. And, oh, let me see, maybe we should opt out. It seems almost a little too ludicrous coming full circle again. There's another bill floating around. It's the procurement portions of this. It really can't be seen as separate from this bill, and so I've actually told Representative Hornstein's committee person, or maybe I didn't, I think I may have told the wrong person, that we shouldn't go forward separately with that. It deals with all of the other details if you do this. Capital, operating, fuel, purchase and maintenance of buses, and revenue streams for all of this. How are we going to deal with it? There are ramifications, as Mr. DeWitt said, for how we do things. And I contend, because we haven't dealt with governance and funding, that we are falling behind our economic competitors. Our economic competitors are moving ahead quickly and aggressively. We had a conference at the university a few weeks ago, and Utah and Denver were presenting to us. Utah is a very, very conservative state. And in that community, like many others, the business community was leading the charge. They get that this is what helps make them economically competitive. Rochester is trying to make that case. Rochester came to my office, a year or two ago, and because we don't have a governance structure for them to go anywhere else. And they asked, how did St. Cloud and Duluth get ahead of us? Because communities begin to understand the importance of being connected. And Rochester begins to understand they have to be connected somehow as a regional center to succeed economically. Governance needs to make sense and work for everyone. There's much more to be said, Mr. Chair, and today I haven't even gone into the details of the bill because they're sort of irrelevant at this point. What we're trying to say today is, at a certain point, you have to take a look at all of these things, sit around a table, and stop layering on bureaucracy, occasionally get rid of what is either inequitable, unfair, so I think I'll stop there. I've probably taken more time than you wanted to spend.
We're getting close. Representative Hausman, I think you actually drove it home, and I think, as I understand, Representative Hornstein committed to have interim hearings on this subject, and I know this committee, we anticipate having some hearings on some of the issues that addresses this too during the summer, because you definitely need to do it. We can't do it on committee time basically here, I don't think.
There is a huge amount of work. Mr. Chair, I was going to pass out one thing when I was talking about, this did get copied right. This goes way back to 2006. This is the issue of how we have created our transit system. This is the various providers and a 2006 subsidy for passenger. I had asked Mr. Burris to get this. He had to work really, really hard to get me a copy of this. I've asked for an updated copy because this goes back to 2006. As far as I know, that is not available yet. So this is the most recent, but there are two sides of this. And it gives you some sense of how we're building our transit system currently, and I would be hard-pressed to explain exactly how that is. So, Mr. Chair, that's all for now, and I understand you're laying the bill on the table, and I would just hope that there is a broader concerted effort to try to bring some structure to the governance and funding decisions needed.
Representative Hornstein, do you want to say anything?
Well, very briefly, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to thank Representative Hausman. This is really a very critical discussion, and you know there's a lot to like and some things to maybe disagree with in this proposal, at least me personally, but there's no question that the system's broken, and I'll have a bill Monday in local government to do a COG. You have COG-like cities listed here. It's very, very clear that we ought to be engaged in, I think, a vigorous discussion, perhaps in the interim. And let's put some ideas on the table. I would invite the committee and invite the public, if you have ideas about how to reform our current system of metropolitan governance, transit governance in the state, I think it's a really good time to think about reform. And this is a system that's been in place since 1967. Maybe the current structure needs to be changing with the times. So, again, there's a lot of individual policies that I could comment on, but I would just invite the committee to be engaged in this process.
Well, I think, Representative Hornstein, I think we're not going to act on Representative Hausman's bill. That's
right.
The intent.
Right, and it's just more to get a conversation started.
But I think we have to do, perhaps, steady a little more in conversation.
Absolutely.
We better determine something.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
And thank you. We basically, this is just an introduction. We weren't anticipating any testimony. We have one bill. Oh, that's mine. Where am I at? We laid a bill that's on the table the other day dealing with hazardous materials. And actually, at this point, I think I'll just lay the bill over. But what we've done, it was pretty well discussed. The policy part in Representative Hornstein. Technically, all we have to do in this committee would be look at the finance, and the finance had implications of $209,000 negative, I think, or basically that the Department of Public Safety would lose if we were to pass this bill. And I don't know what's happening in the Senate, and if we want some discussion on it, I'm just going to lay the bill over. If the committee wants to, while it's fresh in your mind, we're not going to reopen the debate on the policy portion. And the only thing that we deal with here is, again, the Department of Public Safety stands to lose $209,000 because, in my opinion, it's a redundancy for duplication on the permit process.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to that point, until we figure out really what our targets are and how we can, you know, what our plan is for this, I would suggest you hold the bill for a while until we can get a better handle on this, because I certainly don't want to see the department go backwards on this, although I do certainly agree with you, Mr. Chairman, that this is a redundant situation. We just need to figure out, I think, we put our heads together, we can figure out how we're going to solve this, because it is an issue I think needs some resolution to it. But I'd like to see us figure out how we can afford to do it too.
Thank you, Representative Magnus. Any other comments? If not, we'll lay that House File 994 on the table for possible. Beg your pardon? Did someone want to testify quickly?
Okay. The department, so.
Mr. Kerr, I believe, isn't it?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, again, John Kerr with the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. I just wanted to clarify one point, Mr. Chairman. The monies in question do not go directly to our Department of Public Safety. They simply go into the fees in question simply go into the general fund. So there's no direct connection between the loss of fees to the general fund and the appropriation that we receive for the state hazardous materials regional response team program.
Go directly to the general fund?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any questions, Mr. Kerr? No, thank you, Mr. Kerr.
Thank you.
Did the other gentleman, do you have something? I don't remember the name. Did you have a comment or anything? Mr. Ritchie?
Yes. Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Michael Ritchie. I'm a hazardous materials specialist with the Minnesota Department of Transportation's Office of Freight and Commercial Vehicle Operations. Just one very brief comment. MnDOT does not oppose the bill as it was amended a couple days ago to eliminate the program. The program hasn't done what it was expected to do when it was founded back in the mid-1990s, and so we have no objection to that.
Any questions for Mr. Ritchie? No, thank you very much, Mr. Ritchie. Any further questions or testimony? If not, we skip the next meeting, don't we? The next meeting for next Tuesday will be taken by Representative Hornstein. It'll be at the same time, I believe, in the same room, Representative Hornstein.
That's right.
So they'll be using our committee time. So, and we have our next meeting a week from today. No further questions, the meeting's adjourned.